Application for White House press spokespersons. Please answer the following questions as you believe we would like you to answer them. Okay. Question one. Have you ever committed a crime involving moral turpitude? Hell yeah. Question two. If no, would you be willing to commit crimes involving moral turpitude? Absolutely. Rolling. Question three. Please look into the camera and say the following as if they were true. Okay. That's what I'm good at. Donald Trump won the presidential popular vote. If you don't count all the illegal votes. Okay. Two, the travel ban is not a Muslim ban. And it is all about keeping America safe. Okay, okay, I get this. Three, we are one of the highest taxed nations in the world. Yeah, last one, suck it up. The news media is the enemy of the American people. Except for one more time. I got this. The news media is the enemy of the American people. Except for Fox News, of course. Okay, I'm done. Question four. Now, repeat the above with a Russian accent.
It's time for Forward Nation Radio. Is the host of Forward Nation Radio, David Leventhal. David.
Hello and welcome to Forward Nation Radio with me, David Leventhal. Thanks for joining us. This part we don't have to do with the Russian accent, right? Although it might be fitting. On today's show, news as always, we'll spend a bunch of time on the news and we will continue our discussion of Trump's accomplishments, such as they are. Okay, starting off with the news. Well, gee, where do we start? Why don't we start in Russia? Russia's story is becoming really delineated as tragedy and comedy progressing at the very same time. Comedy, perhaps, the revolving door, the soap opera that we keep seeing. We all know that Sean Spicer has left Trump's White House press spokesperson, but the team continues to evolve. Politico's reported that a spokesman for Trump's legal team resigned because he felt he was being lied to too much, that he couldn't trust his clients, and so he couldn't work on the legal team anymore. The question now, of course, on everybody's minds is what's going to happen to Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Trump has been unloading on him for the last few days, people trying to figure out why. Again, perhaps trying to attribute motive to a man who doesn't often seem to have any other than whatever feels good at the moment. But Trump has been unloading on his Attorney General Jeff Sessions in large part because he should have squelched the Russia investigation. And let's be clear, when Trump says that he's very upset with the Attorney General, shows a lack of spine, that he should have recused himself, or he should not have recused himself from the Russia investigation. He should have told Trump that he was thinking of recusing himself before, of course, this issue even arose. The whole implication of that is that if he didn't recuse himself, he could have buried the investigation earlier. Trump said we wouldn't have the independent counsel to deal with, and apparently we wouldn't even have a Justice Department investigation to deal with because Sessions would have squelched it. That's the whole point for why people are required to recuse themselves. The Sessions soap opera is just enlivened by the whole idea of if he does end up firing Sessions or making Sessions so miserable that he forces him to quit, who's going to replace him? We're going to talk more, as we have in the past, about the quality of Trump's cabinet, the people that he has running the government. It's just going to get lower and lower because who the hell wants to subject themselves to this? The only people he's going to have available to replace Sessions as Attorney General are people who are so spectacularly unqualified to be Attorney General that this figures to get awfully interesting if he goes down that route. So, of course, everybody says, well, he can't fire Sessions. That would be a terrible move. It would be bad politics. And as people point out, Trump, if you're a supporter, I guess you say Trump doesn't like to play politics. If you're anybody else, you say Trump just does whatever the hell feels good at the moment without any thought as to the implications of it. So who the hell knows what's going to happen here? Trump did indicate that he is starting an investigation of the special counsel Bob Mueller and his team. Preemptive strikes for whatever it is that they're going to be finding out. They are investigating the team and will be, as they tried to change the subject from Russia collusion and Russia entanglements to leakers. We're now going to have changing whatever the findings come out from the Mueller team, that it's going to be all about, gee, why are they after the president so much? Look at the kind of people that they are. Related to that, it's also been reported that the president has made inquiries about the extent of his pardoning power. Can he pardon everybody, his entire family, and himself? And while there seems to be some question about exactly how far his pardon power goes with respect to pardoning himself, most people figure there might be ways around that. But pardoning himself would not end an impeachment investigation. Whatever, at some point in time, the Republicans are going to have to show up for this party. And lastly, on the Russia story, not to be missed, Congress reaches a deal on Russia sanctions also for Iran, North Korea. But this, as we indicated last week, a complete rebuke to Trump. Congress saying that we do not give the President of the United States authority to remove the sanctions because we do not trust the President of the United States. This just passed in Congress today with, I believe, two or three votes against it. It now does have to be passed by the Senate. And we'll see if the Senate bothers to go about dealing with this. McConnell has already come out and said, well, you know, we got a lot of important things that we need to do. We need to name a whole bunch of post offices after Ronald Reagan. So if we have some time, we'll probably get to this one too. The negotiations on trying to bury this somehow in the Senate, because of course, if this bill also goes through the Senate, the White House has been put in a position where they seem to be unable to veto this. And yet, put between a rock and a hard place because they clearly don't want these sanctions to happen. Healthcare, unfortunately, we have to keep talking about that one. The good news on healthcare is how popular the healthcare bill has suddenly become. And by healthcare bill, I am, of course, referring to Obamacare, which has gotten a surge in popularity once people have gotten some ability to see what the Republicans are planning. I thought the Times had the great quote on this one. Someone, a Trump voter who was strongly against Obamacare, who said, "I can't even remember why I opposed it." This isn't that shocking. You opposed it because Fox News told you to oppose it. That doesn't exactly create deep roots as to your concerns about the underpinnings of the law. You opposed it because you were told to, and you were told it was bad, without a whole lot of thought as to what you liked and what you didn't like. Well, now, when you're seeing some alternatives, you've decided that it turns out living under Obamacare has actually improved your life. So what had gone away is now back. Just yesterday, the Senate voted to open debate on the bill that had previously been rejected. Now, when we say open debate, understand that that's the term of art that's used that is completely inappropriate in this particular circumstance, because the whole point of this is not to have a debate. I guess the better terminology would say the Senate voted to move the bill forward. That seems to make more sense. The Senate voted 51-50 to move the bill forward. For those of you who are math majors, you figured out that that makes 101. And yes, with two Republican defectors, Vice President Mike Pence had to go to the Senate to cast the tie-breaking vote to move this piece of shit forward. Among the dissenters was not Shelley Moore Capito, who we talked about last week, who famously noted that she did not get sent to Washington to hurt people. Well, apparently she had a change of heart in a week, either about somewhat the merits of the bill or moving it forward, or why she was sent to the Senate and her Republican roots. She voted to move it forward. Why is this problematic? Because the whole point, as indicated, is not to open debate, but to try to end debate. Rushing through a bill with very little feedback and not going through the congressional committee is a way to get it done before people really realize what's going on. In fact, after the vote to move the bill forward, they did take another vote on the bill that was currently available, and it went down badly to defeat, 43-57. Considering it could be filibustered, they were 17 votes short of that one. But what's going to be happening now, make no mistake, is behind closed doors, when the American public has no idea what's going on, they are going to be twisting arms, putting guns to people's heads, loading up the bill with all kinds of perks to please various Republican holdouts, and making lots of threats to try to get this bill through. It is not a done deal that this bill is going to go down. So go out and protest, call your congressman, call other congressmen, call your senators, and fight this thing, because this could still happen. The health care bill, of course, relates, smoothly transitions us to another big issue of the week, which is John McCain's return to the Senate and his speech, which is generally being highly lauded. John McCain, of course, you should know, has been diagnosed with a brain tumor, which almost certainly, brain cancer, which almost certainly means a death sentence. So, our timing isn't so great, perhaps, to criticize John McCain, but here it is. John McCain came to the floor and gave a speech about how the Senate needs to start doing the right thing and needs to start working for the American people again. Inspiring words that we should all agree with. However, he proceeded to use the usual Republican tricks. The first one and most prevalent one is false equivalence. It's both sides. Both sides are doing this. Both sides have been bad. It hasn't been both sides. It's been overwhelmingly one side. It's been the Republican side that's gone insane, that's gone extreme, that's refused to work on policies to promote the interests of the American public, the other side. That's not to say that Democrats haven't done things that are bad. But to equate the two things, as I keep saying, is like saying, well, the Nazis did bad things, but so did the Jews. There's blame to go around to everybody. As we've read in the past, and as David Brooks even once again elaborated on in a column earlier this week, it is one political party that has lost the ability or the inclination to govern. And don't put both sides in the same category. John McCain did come out and say that he is guilty of lowering the level of discourse in the United States Senate. But again, even that understates, congratulations for taking some responsibility for this, but that really understates your role in this. And let's remember John McCain's progression or regression, as it was. In 2000, John McCain ran for the Republican nomination against George W. Bush, Boy George, and at that point was a maverick and was one of the most respected politicians in America. He was still arch-conservative. He still wasn't right for America, but he had this whole integrity and honesty thing that seemed to be going in his favor. And the Republican Party establishment teamed up to defeat him, to get their boy the nomination, and John McCain learned his lesson. And since that time, he has become the bitch of the most extreme elements of the Republican Party. People have been talking about how John McCain is even, his name is on the campaign finance reform bill last passed. A bill, let's be clear, that he ran against in 2008, opposed to his own bill. John McCain gave that wonderful speech about moving forward and Senate decorum and actually trying to work to help the American public right before he cast a vote to move this bill forward without debate. He even said this bill should go back through the committee and be reworked. That's right. And you know what could have led to that happening? You either could have voted for that to be the case, or you could have not shown up to vote, in which case the bill would have gone down to defeat 50-49. So you're talking from both sides of your mouth, like every Republican. You'll go tell your constituents what a reasonable, thoughtful, decent, middle-of-the-road guy you always want to be. And then you'll make sure that you are the bitch of the Republican Party and you do what you're told. And you will go back to your constituents, the right-wing ones voting in primaries in Arizona, and you will say, don't listen to what I say. Look at what I've done. I've been your bitch. Reward me for it. Just this morning, late breaking news, Donald Trump got to his cell phone again and tweeted that we will not, the United States military will not be allowing transgendered people to serve in the military. This is the kind of policy and policy decision that you, of course, make in a tweet. Very presidential. Here we go again. I know it's both sides. And once again, I'm going to be clear in saying that I am not saying that everyone who votes Republican is a bigot. But I will repeat again the fact that the Republican Party turns to its bigots whenever the going gets rough. And to change the focus from the Russia investigation, healthcare, whatever's going on, what do? They reach out to the bigots. Let's pick on transgendered people who don't have it tough enough. What a bunch of shits. This is how you make political points: by promoting hatred, by making lives difficult for many of your citizens. As a Jewish American, I guess this is a chance for me to say, thank you, transgendered people. At least they moved on from the Jews. We could be attacking other minorities hated by the haters on the right. AT&T has announced with Time Warner an $85.4 billion buyout, or merger, apparently, depending on who you ask. What's shocking about this, two huge companies like this wanting to merge, two communications companies, media companies, once again merging, is that the experts seem to indicate that there are really no antitrust issues that are going to come up. That the bill, that the proposed buyout or merger should basically sail through. Once again, more media consolidation, more power among the hugest corporations in America, less power for American citizens. But what's particularly interesting about this story, what has not been widely reported, is that it's being reported that a senior administration official has noted to news journalists that White House advisors had discussed using this merger as leverage over CNN. In other words, Time Warner, which owns CNN, wants to merge. There's going to be a lot of money involved. In fact, the chairman of Time Warner figures to make almost $100 million if this merger goes through. So I'm sure he's got the best interests of the American public at heart. You wouldn't sell out for $100 million, would you? But the Trump administration apparently is discussing how they can threaten Time Warner that unless they start changing the news focus of CNN, the deal might be jeopardized. Just think for a moment about the implications of this. We don't like the news you're reporting. And if you want to get rich, you're going to have to report news more to our liking. As alternative fake news increasingly becomes de rigueur in America. And last for the news, Democrats have come out promoting a progressive agenda. Democrats have decided as a matter of strategy that they are not just going to be the party of no. They are not just going to be seen as the anti-Trump, anti-Republican party, that in fact they believe that their road back to political power, or at least political relevance, goes through proposing alternatives for the American public. It's interesting first that they determine that, and really says something about the difference, I guess, in the two constituencies for the Democratic and Republican Party. Why would the Democrats possibly think that they could possibly get back to power by simply rejecting everything the Republicans stand for? Well, this is, of course, what the Republicans spent 8 years doing under Barack Obama when the Democrats had the presidency and were running the country. Republicans spent 8 years basically just saying no to everything. That was their strategy. This is why they're having a really hard time governing, because they've made no effort to promote anything that they believe in and they think the American public believes in. They've just been trying to stop everything. And where has that effort to just stop government from working? Keep this in mind, John McCain. Where has that gotten the Republicans? Well, let's be clear. It's gotten them the judiciary, the House of Representatives, the Senate, and the presidency. It worked for them. Democrats don't think that will work with their voters or the people they need to pick up in order to get back to power. What's also interesting is the priorities and how progressivism is coming back to the Democratic Party. Chuck Schumer had an op-ed in the Times and had a press conference where he spoke about this with several other Democrats. He's apparently taking the lead on this. He may not be running for president, but I guess he'd like to be Senate majority leader. What are the three priorities that he outlined? Listeners, see how opposed you are to these three things. One, higher pay for workers. Workers who have suffered from not having higher pay for about 40 years in this country. They are, in fact, getting behind the $15 an hour federal minimum wage. Something we have talked about positively on this show many times before. They also seek to lower expenses for the average American middle-class family. Expenses such as child care, health care, the things that are eating into the average American's lifestyle. Imagine a country that ensures that everybody has paid sick leave, vacation time, child care when they need it. And skills training, they've also promised. Now, Trump promised this as well, although hasn't made any move to deliver on any of this. This is the idea, as we've been talking about for a long time. You've got two choices with workers who don't have the skills for the globalized 21st century economy. You can either try to go back to the past, and let's all go back into the coal mines, which we're not going to do. Let's all go back to building buggy whips. Or you're going to have to retrain workers and give them the skills they need to succeed in an economy designed to be ready for the future. They have already proposed a $1 trillion infrastructure, the $15 minimum wage, paid family, and sick leave. They're also announcing that they will be working on regulating drug price gouging, antitrust enforcement, small business tax credits for job training in order to make those things happen. If the Democratic Party decides that it needs to be promoting a more progressive agenda than it has promoted as a party in several decades, then there is some good that is coming out of the tragedy of the last election. Okay, last time we talked about the Congressional Review Act and what Donald Trump has accomplished under the Congressional Review Act. We left out one because I said it's going to take a little bit more discussion. I'd like to have that discussion right now. First of all, the Congressional Review Act, well, one of the things that Congressional Review Act does is limits the ability of states to set up retirement accounts for workers who do not have them. Under Obama, the federal government instituted a policy whereby they promoted states setting up retirement accounts for workers who do not have them, pensions, 401ks, and the like. Why is this an important issue? Because too many American workers do not have money saved for retirement. This is not good for the country. It's not good for younger workers who need space in the workforce as older people retire. It's not good for America because old people living in poverty, living in the streets, isn't good for the brochures. So we have a huge incentive as a country to make sure that people save for retirement, which, among other things, of course, requires that they get paid well enough to actually have money to save, but that they also have incentives to put off purchases that they may not need right now so that they could save for a time where maybe they can retire and live well in retirement. In fact, this whole idea was originally a conservative idea propounded by the Heritage Foundation back when there was a time where conservatives could be part of the gray area and hadn't just gone completely insane. Trump's move to prevent states from setting up these retirement accounts is opposed by most state-level Republicans. Republican governors. Why is that the case? Same reason they're opposing the Senate health care bill, the Republican health care bill. They're opposing this because Republicans at the state level, at the governorships and the like, actually need to govern. Unlike the United States Senate, which can just figure out how to blame somebody else for their problems, move on. As we said last week, it's the governors who are going to get the blame. So they don't like this. They actually think the policy is working. It helps the states. It helps the states' budget. It helps them deal with retired workers. Okay. This raises an issue that needs a couple of minutes of discussion. It is a concept of something called opt-in versus opt-out. The idea of states setting up these retirement accounts, the obvious response to that is, well, why don't the workers just do it themselves? And that is a great response, except for the fact that workers, people just don't do these things on their own. People are busy, they're not sufficiently informed, they push things off to the future, whatever it is. And this is the concept of opt-in versus opt-out. If you have to opt into something, that requires affirmative action on your part, and what we have learned is that most people will not do it. Instead, what we've learned is if it's something important for these people and for this country, what you should do is you should make people automatically enrolled. And if they don't want it, they have the ability to opt out. Now what happens is the affirmative action that must be conducted is to get you out of the policy to your benefit, not to get you in. And simply by the fact that we are very inactive, That will mean that more people will have retirement accounts. This issue came up a few years ago. I just want to revisit this for a few moments. A few years ago, most Americans, at least those of us who were banking with any of the big financial institutions, the big banks, were automatically given overdraft protection for our accounts, which meant that if we used our debit card and spent too much money, instead of getting word that said, well, you don't have enough money in your account, and having the purchase denied, the bank would cover the purchase and give us automatic overdraft protection with huge fees and huge interest rates. And in fact, the banks were doing this in such a corrupt manner that they were dramatically increasing the fees and the interest so that people were getting overwhelmed by the amount of money they were being charged for these overdraft protections because they thought they had more money in their account than they actually did, perhaps because their paycheck had not yet cleared when they thought that it had. This was making the banks a whole lot of money and further impoverishing a whole lot of people who already didn't have enough. So what did the Obama administration do? They forced the banks to change it from an opt-out system to an opt-in system. We could avoid overdraft protection if we called up our bank, if we did what we needed to do to get out of the overdraft protection. But most people, of course, weren't going to do that. So instead, the rules were changed and said, you do not have overdraft protection. The banks can reach out to you and say, here's the protection that we're offering. Do you want that? And then you, and of course, they would deceive you and mislead you about what the implications were. But even so, it would require you to actually say, okay, I'm going to opt into this. Yes, I would like overdraft protection. And after Obama passed this rule, I started getting all these things in the mail from the banks saying, we love you. We want to help you. We've been giving you overdraft protection all this time because of how much we love you. But Obama stopped us from doing this. So just fill out the line here that says you'd like us to keep doing that. Well, by the same theory, if retirement accounts were made opt-out, more people would be able to retire in somewhat more comfort than they're able to now. Also on that list, related to workers, the Trump administration is working to rescind the Obama regulation making millions of workers eligible for overtime pay. And the way this works is that companies do not have to provide overtime pay to salaried management supervisory employees. So what did they learn to do? They took their low-paid wage employees who were making a lot of money working a lot of overtime and said, congratulations, we are promoting you to management. And now when you work all those extra hours, you're not going to get paid for them. And so people were getting promoted to management and taking a huge pay cut, which they probably couldn't afford. So the Obama administration instituted a rule that said, if you are making very little money, if your salary is below a certain point, they can call you whatever the hell they want. But for purposes of overtime pay and whether you qualify for mandatory overtime pay, you will be considered a wage and hour employee that will be entitled to overtime pay. So it's happy days for workers under the Trump administration. So that's what they've accomplished under the Congressional Review Act. But there's so much more that they've done through their actions and through their regulations. More on that next time. As always, thank you for joining us at Forward Nation Radio. Like Looking Forward, go to ForwardNationRadio.com. That's ForwardNationRadio.com and get the full experience. You'll see the video from this and every episode there and on our YouTube channel as well. Don't miss the next Forward Nation Radio podcast on Podbean at Podbean.com. Check us out on all of our social media. If you like what you heard, like us on Facebook. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel. Tell your friends. Spread the word. Forward Nation Radio. See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward Nation Radio with David Leventhal.